This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
Robert Stark here. I'm joined here with Flower Heart. Flower Heart, great speaking with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I'm also joined here with Francis Nally slash Billiter.
Hi, Robert. How are you?
So we're going to be discussing like issues about Asian and Asian American culture and demographics. But I found out about you from Walt Bismarck's podcast. But I think to start things off, can you go over the geographic breakdowns of the different waves of Chinese immigration to America, and what is your background in particular?
So I'm not an expert, but I think in broad terms, Chinese immigration started out during the Gold Rush in the late 1840s, 1850s. A lot of Chinese people from the rural countryside near Guangzhou, Canton. They came here to gold mine and to work in the supply shops for gold miners. That was the first wave. That was cut off, obviously, by the Chinese Exclusion Act. And one thing, the interesting thing they did about during that wave of immigration was that the government was really, really afraid of the idea of Chinese women seducing white men. So they only really let men in. So there was a gender ratio of something like 15-1 in Chinatowns back then. And that, you know, naturally societies like that are extremely violent and crime-ridden, and Chinatown was no exception. So Chinese immigration didn't really reopen until 1965, when the 24 Immigration Act was repealed, which took away restrictions on immigration based on national origin. And then you had a second wave of Chinese immigration. And my mom was part of that wave. My mom came in 1981. So I'm from the Cantonese region of China. My mom's from Guangzhou or Canton. And that era of Chinese immigration was still mostly Cantonese or some Taiwanese. But then in recent years, since the tech boom in Silicon Valley, the immigration has been much more, you know, from other parts of China that are Mandarin speaking. So that's changed the demographic breakdown of a lot of Chinese neighborhoods in the Bay Area and throughout
so,
the country.
San Francisco's Chinatown, that's primarily Cantonese.
San Francisco Chinatown is primarily Cantonese. There's also a lot of them are from the Taishan region. So the original gold miners who came were from the rural villages in a place called Taishan. They speak a language close to Cantonese, but I can't really understand them. They can understand me. And a lot of San Francisco has people like that too.
What are some of the different stereotypes and traits of these different groups? And is there any degree of tension? I know when I interviewed Rajiv Ram, who's a Tamil Brahmin from Indian immigrant background, he said there is some difference between Indian immigrants who came in the 70s and 80s and more recent like H-1Bs. Like, I don't know if I'd say it's a lot of tension, but he said like more recent immigrants tend to view America more as an economic zone. Is there a mirror of that trend with Chinese immigration, and thoughts on some of the different regional differences of the different waves and stereotypes they have of each other?
Racial differences. I'm not sure there's any racial differences.
Not racial, regional.
Oh, regional. So the recent the former immigrants were more Cantonese or from the rural villages in the outskirts of Canton. The more recent ones are Taiwanese or from other parts of Mandarin-speaking parts of China. A lot of the ones in New York City are from Fuzhou, right across the street from Taiwan. In terms of values and sociological differences. I personally don't see many, but there are a lot, but there are, but the, I think the main one is language. So like people like my mom are very unhappy with parts of for instance, New York City Chinatown being that are no longer Cantonese speaking. Many of the restaurants there are no longer Cantonese cuisine, but other types of cuisine from other parts of China. And the regional differences between cuisines within China are bigger than many of the differences between different, say, European countries. So it's a very significant thing. And yeah.
Is there an economic difference? Are the recent wave of Mandarin speakers, are they wealthier and more in the managerial class?
I think I'd struggle to find data with that, but my impression is probably because the recent ones are probably more likely to be, say, H-1B visas, engineers working in Silicon Valley. That being said, I grew up in Oakland Chinatown, and there are a lot of, very poor immigrants as well. Like, for example, many of my grandmother's 91. Many of her caretakers throughout the last couple of decades have been illiterate and so illiterate in Chinese that they literally cannot read soy sauce.
What are some of your observations of recent immigration trends? Do you see Chinese immigration continuing, or do you see it starting to decline, similar to how Korean immigration peaked back in the 80s and 90s, and it's declined a lot?
Well, Korean immigration peaked, I would like declined, I would say probably because of its maturing demographics, the aging nature of its population. They have less excess young workers to send, and also because of its economic prosperity, right? And both trends are there in China, although with econo although it hasn't become an advanced economy like Korea just yet. There probably will be a slowing of H-1B visas to Chinese immigrants. Already, the vast majority are Indian. What my mom is an engineer in Silicon Valley. She has been since the 80s, and back then it was mostly whites and Chinese. Now it's increasingly only Indian. So that's probably likely to continue, especially as national security concerns bar many Chinese from, working in these jobs with sensitive technologies.
Is there any tension between East Asians and Indian immigrants in Silicon Valley?
Well, I haven't read of widespread tensions. I don't think there's really much there aren't really many ethnic enclaves. The Indians don't form any enclaves at all, but many
Isn't like
Chinese
cities, certain cities like Fremont, I think, Fremont or maybe Milpitas are Indian enclaves.
I think they're Asian enclaves, like they're Asian majority cities, but I think they've a lot of both Indians and Chinese. But the Indian proportion is growing relative to the Chinese in a lot of these places. I will say a lot of the Chinese friends and relatives in my life are extremely racist towards Indians. My mom hates Indians. She thinks they undercut her wages as a software engineer. They think she doesn't like how they talk in English super fast, but she can't understand them. In one of her last jobs at an AI voice recognition company, at first the manager was white and there was a few Chinese people. An Indian company bought it and fired all the whites and Chinese, including her manager. So she doesn't like, I guess the ethnic loyalty some of them have. And a lot of Chinese people, like in mainland China that I talk to in general, are sort of racist towards Indians because they view themselves as so much superior. When I talk to mainland Chinese people about, the possibility of China becoming a multi-party democracy, they're like, oh, we'll be a shithole like India. We don't want to become that. So that's the attitude of among a lot of Chinese people I talk to.
So your background, where you grew up, is you said in the Walt interview, Walt Bismarck, is you went to a diverse middle class school in Alameda, and then you went to a more upper class, mostly white school in Arinda. Can you talk about that background and the distinctions?
So I went to Alameda High for 2 years, and then I went to Miramani for 2 years. I'd say Alameda High is like majority Asian, and a much bigger proportion of Blacks and Hispanics. I guess I don't think the sociological differences are that big, and the political differences certainly aren't. They're all very left wing. They all have DEI classes and everything. I guess the biggest difference is that a lot of the Asians in Alameda High, especially the ones that I play basketball in high school, so a lot of the ones that play basketball sort of want to imitate, Black oppositional culture, hood culture, whatever you want to call it. So I was playing I was at a park in Alameda playing pickup basketball the other day, yesterday. And some Asians, had their shirt off, were talking in AV English, were calling each other the N word that ends with the A. That's something that was quite jarring. Because the traditional understanding is that most Asian Americans are very economically successful, educated, and sort of blend into white culture. But these guys are blending into Black oppositional culture. And there's some of that within some subsets of Alameda where there is a bigger Black population, I guess.
What were some of your cultural and demographic observations going to high school in a more affluent white area in Arinda?
I guess the parents were less. One thing that my mom joked about is that she wanted to send me to a white majority high school instead of an Asian majority one because the parents push their kids less hard, they're less aggressively competitive, and it's a little more relaxed and laid back environment. And I'd say that's true with Miramonte, although it's one of the top high schools in the state, in the country. So obviously the schoolwork is still quite rigorous, but.
Yeah, Francis, do you remember we were actually in that area? Do you remember that time we were in the Bay Area, we went to Briones Regional Park, and you made that video, you were kind of making fun of me going down that steep hill. Remember that?
I remember that. I'm from Japantown, so it was in that area that I'm pretty much am very familiar with up to Russian Hill. So other than East Bay, I could probably go out to Concord, but it's certainly different geography for sure.
In the Bay Area, did you notice is there a divide between like Asian ethnoburbs and communities where you see more fusionism between like assimilated Asian Americans and more like white Asian mixed families? Is there a strong distinction there? Which I guess the latter is something that like Francis talks a lot about.
I would say there's definitely much more intermixing in less Asian dominated suburbs where there's a bigger white population. So like in Orinda, many of the kids that I knew who were mixed white and Asian were the product of a sec an Asian secretary who married a white manager, businessman, or something like that. That's a very common combination among that generation, the Boomer Gen X generation. In places like San Leandro, Hayward, where there's a pretty small white population, but a pretty big Asian and Hispanic population. Some of the Asian kids I went to school with growing up when I was in elementary, middle school. I've seen some of them on Instagram are dating. Some of those Asian ch kids are dating, Latinos. So there's a
So
bit of a
you do
mix
see, it's
there too.
interesting, you see these different ethnogenesis like forming in different enclaves.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Do you have thoughts on some of the white flight out of Asian ethnoburbs? Is it primarily because they're too hyper competitive economically and on it for education, or do you think it's other reasons?
I do notice it, first of all, because I grew up, okay, so like the first five until I was like 5 or 6, I grew up in Danville. And Danville back then was like 85% white. And my mom and
I've
dad.
been there. It's really nice.
And my mom and dad, like when they first got there in the early 2000s, late 90s, they noticed that they were really conscious about being the only Asians in the block. And my dad would used to say, we have to get the nicest cars on our driveway and everything to show that we belong, that we're not these guys to be looked down upon, and so on. And now my parents are divorced, but my dad recently sold his house a couple of years ago, and in Danville, and he noticed that every single house that was being sold, including his, was being sold to an Indian guy. So Danville has gotten a lot more Asian. It's like 30% Asian now. It's 68% white.
Oh, really?
And
Because
next
the
door in
route, I
Danville.
think the last time I was there maybe 5 years ago, the last time I was there when it was fairly crowded, my estimate was maybe like 70% white, about a quarter Asian.
Well, yes, they're 68% white, so yeah, somewhere around that. That's the latest numbers I've seen. But next door in San Ramon, which if you live in Danville, you drive by a lot, in many roads, you got to drive by San Ramon to get to many places. It's gotten down to 32% white compared to like over 70 20 years ago. So San Ramon has like followed the Tri-Valley region and becoming, Asian ethnoburbs that you wrote about, like Pleasanton, Dublin, in the Substack article you
All
sent
right.
me. Yeah, I don't, as for why it's happening, I mean, I guess a
You think
lot
it's
of it is,
mostly the tech boom?
I'd say it's a tech boom. There's a lot of wealthy Asians, like the Indians who are buying my dad's house. Many of them can afford
I think
these
you
towns.
clarified in Danville the new buyers overwhelmingly Indian, but not so much East Asian.
I admit I haven't been there a lot recently, so I can't really say. And the census breakdowns often don't distinct between the two, but my dad commented Indian. As for why it's happening, it's I think the tech boom, that high cost of housing in Silicon Valley, remote work, which led to a lot of, people in San
Or
Francisco
the
and Silicon
hybrid
Valley.
model. I think there was like the hybrid model that took off after the pandemic.
Yeah, a lot of them moved to the exurbs. So if you look at Fairfield, Vacaville, those places are taking off to Solano County. And I think also because the white population is just older, which is a trend throughout the rest of the country. So there's higher death rates, and lower birth rates. And also, I think a lot of like older, like 60, 70 white people who raise their families in these places might want to downsize from their like 2,500 square foot homes, and move to a smaller place. So they sell their house to an Indian or Chinese engineer who wants to move their families there. So.
The overall trends that you see demographically, do you see more enclavism or balkanism, which I've written a lot about, or you see more of this blending between whites, Asians, and Latinos in California and the Bay Area in particular? Or is it more some kind of hybrid of both where you see it's not like total balkanization or total a melting pot, but you see these new ethnogenesis forming? That's kind of the third option. Like which model do you primarily see for the future?
I think there's a big class distinction, obviously, between like I think whites and Asians are wealthier than Hispanics, so like the so like in places like Pleasanton, Danville, Orinda, Moraga, there'll probably be a lot more whites and Asians intermixing, and I don't see a big sociological divide between them. Like when I hang out with friends who are I when I'm at university, I hang out with friends my age who are where there's groups of whites and Asians. There's it almost doesn't. Very few people are even conscious of the fact that we're in a mixed white Asian friend group. Like there's very little consciousness of that. So there's probably a class divide between like some places that are where there's a lot of white Asian intermixture and some places where there's Asian Hispanic intermixture. Although the latter is something that the former is something that you see all throughout the country, like in the Boston
This
greater area.
Asian Hispanic mixes, that's less common, but it is niche. You said certain places like San Leandro in particular.
Yeah, it's not something you say throughout the country a lot, but it's something that I see in like, the East Bay region quite a bit.
So when it comes to white Asian couples, like the gender difference, white male, Asian female, or white Asian male, white female couples, is you've written a lot about that, and so has Francis. Do you think the differences, the gender pairings, they matter in like the traits that they're being selected for in particular?
I don't know if I've written a lot about it. I found out that there was a big difference in gender in this pairing, and I wrote one article about it recently, and I talked about it on Walt's show.
Oh, right.
I think a lot of it is because I think that gender divide is starker in like in previous generations and among like foreign-born Asians who foreign-born Asian women who come here often without great English speaking skills. So many of them work as secretaries or administrative aides, and many of them will marry the boss. Stuff like, and many of them will see marrying a white guy is like marrying up, becoming part of American society. But I don't think it's as big of a deal in our generation. Among my friend groups, I see plenty of, I mean, I've mainly only dated white women basically. And before I became conscious of this fact, I rarely noticed it. I guess there is still a thing about like Asian women being super being there's like this fetishization of Asian women among some white men because they're submissive or whatever. But I don't think that's that prevalent.
I would say that the Bay Area is a unique case because I would just say there's this, what you would call this Eurasianism happening almost close to, SoCal. And I guess they say that's a California thing to be half white, half Asian. And that's a part, I think, what was presented as multiculturalism in the 2000s when as, it's saying before, it's like, well, that's going to be very strange when Indians or the Brahmin class are not intermingling, like, J.D. Vance has his Hindu wife, but you're not seeing that on a grassroots level. And so I think that divide is going to be a very interesting, sharp contrast where you might have a Brahmin class in
Oh
downtown.
yeah, like I could see in the Bay Area's future. I mean, the white population might be pretty diminished, but I could see the two competing demographics of like Indian Brahmins and then Hapas, like the two big demographics that are sort of competing culturally.
You're not going to have the whitewashed Indian girl class going after white men. You're going to have the Eurasian boy and girl class versus pure Indians who might be whitewashed or will only go with a white guy who becomes a Hindu. And that's, kind of an absurd thing to think about. But then again, it shows you numbers. If more numbers of Eurasianism is happening compared to Hindus who won't budge, then I think that's going to be a huge issue in the
Francis, do you see this happening? Is it most primarily California, or you notice it in Philadelphia and New York too?
Not in New York. I think in New York, it's very specific to multiple groups fighting for their interests. You might have, New York, an Egyptian mafia, or a Nepali group of people, or even Roma happening,
All right.
and then Japanese Americans being in Edgewater, and then Koreans having Koreatown kicking out Japanese. What is supposed to be celebrated as a beautiful melting pot, really, it's everybody has their own block. You can be in Coney Island, it's all Russians and they hate Jews, while the Jews are in Flatbush and call anti-Semitism. So I think that's the only place in our country, in New York City, where you can have a rival block every time you go down a station on the MTA.
And
Unlike
I'm
something
actually
different.
going to New York and Philadelphia for the first time actually ever in my life in about later this week, and I'm gonna meet up with you. But what about also in Philadelphia too?
Philadelphia is a different case because those were whites from south of Staten Island who wanted to raise families. And the only divide would have to be some of the northerner blacks that took over the north part and as well has been contained in Baltimore. And so the thing with Philadelphia, it's always been a dividing line on Broad Street where blacks would have the north and the south was infamously what you would call Italian and Irish. And whenever there's a racial riot, especially during the George Floyd riots, it's been a well-known case that the southern lower Italian whites from Fishtown basically got baseball bats and walked around their town protecting in case if blacks try to loot and riot. Those are the only places in the United States during the George Floyd riots where the angry whites of South Philadelphia defended their interest, which just sounds like a very white nationalist fantasy, but because of Philadelphia's demographic interest there, there can be a Chinatown, but the Chinese there have been now replaced with Vietnamese, and most of the Chinese are in the Philadelphia suburbs of Manayunk to King of Prussia. So I think right now, Philadelphia has pretty much largely became the leftover whites of the New York area who are looking to raise families, only then to send their kids back to New York or even to DC. It's somewhere in between, and it seems to be a racial battleground between whites and blacks.
I think he's touching on something there where, like, a lot of the assimilated Chinese descended population will move to the suburbs. Like, the ones who stay in Chinatown are people like my grandma who doesn't speak Chinese, so they have to, like, be there for the Chinese restaurants and stores. It's the only place they can socialize with anyone. But the second, third generation, almost invariably, they move to the suburbs.
Do you think, do you notice Asian male sexual status increasing a lot more with Zoomers and higher than it was, much higher than it was for millennials? And do you think K-pop is responsible? And do millennial Asian men envy Zoomer Asian men?
I have talked about K-pop, increasing the desirability of Asian men. I shared a story in Walt's show where, when I was in Paris, one of my close friends was a white French girl, and she was dating a Vietnamese descended French guy. And the first thing he asked her was, "Are you dating me just for the K-pop stars? Just because you have K-pop fantasies?" And because it happened to him before many times, apparently. So there's definitely some of that. I don't. I've never heard a millennial Asian guy express such sentiments, but if he did feel such things,
Are you
he
millennial
definitely.
or Zoomer?
I'm Zoomer, I'm 21.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would just say that just going back on the Bay Area, I think many people, it's almost been a joke in Christian Lander's stuff, white people like that white people love the Bay Area because it's truly diverse. There's only whites, gays, and Asians. And that's kind of a joke. It's meant that way. But it shows you that that particular, as you said, ethnogenesis can really only happen there because of the interest of what wealthy whites can afford. And I think over time, that fantasy has been destroyed. And so that's why you're now seeing new congregations anywhere from Bushwick, Brooklyn, to pretty much somewhere else in Seattle or Portland, I don't know. But as long as you have new groups of Haitians coming to Dayton, Ohio, or something like that, you kind of have this moving around of human capital where to set up culture and previous ideals of it, whether it's from Boomer or Gen X. Their fantasies of this kind of malaise multiculturalism ends up being a discriminatory practice of, well, we had this ideal of virtue ethics. We wanted this to happen. Now that we can't get this fantasy, what are we going to do now? So I think we're going to see some kind of big revenge retreat, especially in some of the counter anti-liberal forces that are going to be more open about what's going on and demand discriminatorial or open, honest politics now, or identity politics.
Do you think Asians assimilating into white liberal culture, or is it more the value of elite educational or managerial institutions explains a sort of leftward shift among Asians since the whole sort of Cold War anti-communism era ended with a lot of, in the past, like in the 80s, there may have been more Asians voting Republican or for Reagan for anti-communist reasons. That's maybe, there maybe have been some slight swing back in their last election of Trump versus Kamala, but overall, there has been this sort of leftward tilt.
So in the so the in the 19 in I think the 1996 election, that was the earliest exit poll you can go back. 65% of Asians voted Republican, which hasn't been the case in recent years. Although, as you mentioned, there's been some pullback in the last two cycles. I mean, when you're comparing, the evolution of the Asian vote over time, I think like it's vulnerable to a lot of like any analysis is vulnerable to a lot of to composition effect sort of stuff, because like the Asian population has increased so much and there's been so much more immigrants in recent years, so you're comparing different populations. And yeah, the Cold War anti-communist sort of vote has, they're a much smaller proportion of the population now. I think Asian Americans mostly resemble college educated, white professional PMs, professional managerial class voters in their political and sociological outlook, because like them, they go to these same elite universities like UC Berkeley, Stanford, Harvard, whatever, UCLA. And so they form the same sort of view of the world. I think in the Bay Area, though, the Asian American vote is proving to be, a moderating force against, the very left liberal white progressives there. And you see that with, for example, the election of Lori in San Francisco. The first thing he did when he won was he went to Chinatown to celebrate. This is the moderate Democrat guy who wants to stop the fentanyl in the Tenderloin, who wants to, be tough on crime and stuff like that. So I think especially the foreign-born population of the Asian descended population is much more right-wing because
Do
they
you
come
think
from this.
in the Bay Area they're more much more centrist than both the white population and the quote unquote BIPOC population?
There isn't really a big black population left in San Francisco, and it's declining in Oakland. A lot of them are in like Pittsburgh, Antioch now. But yeah, they're much more centrist leaning. Especially, like I said, the foreign-born ones, because the foreign-born ones, like someone like my mom comes from, was born in 1960s China. So the idea of transgender rights is really going to baffle her mind. The idea that meritocracy is racist, that this kind of stuff is really going to baffle her mind. Because, so yeah, and they haven't like undergone the same influences in America's, woke educational institutions. So.
So you wrote an article on your Substack, The Case for Moderate Immigration Restriction. What are your main arguments and responses to those who call you a hypocrite for benefiting from some of the changes like the Hart-Celler Act?
Well, I would say that as an American, my first duty is to think is to consider what's best for American citizens, the interests of American citizens, either native born or the immigrants who are naturalized and already here. And from that perspective, I think the immigration, I think the rates of immigration that we've undergone since 1965 has been too fast in its pace, has increased diversity too much, where there's that it's diminished the bonds that's the commonalities that have binded Americans together. I think, I think that if you want to preserve a cohesive society, the pace of assimilation has to be faster than the pace of newly added diversity from extra inflows of migration. And it's been t and so since 1965, it's been too fast. Like in 1965, this country was like 89% non-Hispanic white or something like that. Now it's like 59%, and they're going to be a minority by 2044, and that stoked a lot of identity-based anxieties that has led to people like Trump who are able to capitalize on it. And people like Trump come with detriments like undermining our democratic institutions, and so on. So I think if you want to stop people like Trump from being elected, you have
What
to
do you think about
accommodate.
that recent thing where Trump's, like, his hardcore anti-immigration base are pretty pissed off because he proposed letting in 500,000 Chinese students in exchange for a trade deal on rare earth minerals?
I haven't heard of that specifically, but I think that Trump at his heart is not all that racially motivated of a person, and he just uses the votes of people who
He's very
have these interests.
transactional.
Yeah. And I also don't think that the Chinese immigration is that big of a deal, because the Chinese descended population in this country is what, like 2% of the population. I'm more worried about the Hispanic migrant inflow,
Well, that is huge, but I think in the Barrie in particular, the high prices have maybe slowed down that subset of immigration, but it's still a big issue nationwide.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing about Hispanic immigration is that we've never in our immigrant history had we've had a lot of immigrants in our history, but there's never been one single group that speaks one language that has that is that geographically concentrated in the Southwest, this one portion of the country that they used to that, Mexico, many of which these immigrants come from, used to have a territorial claim over. And I think that's a problem. I think if you look at like linguistic attrition rates, like third generation Hispanic immigrants are much more likely to speak Spanish fluently relative to, say, Asian immigrants, because the bigger the group size, the less the rates of intermarriage, the more incentive you have to hold on to your language to communicate with new arrivals. Like if you, I think the 1924 Immigration Act, which stopped immigration from, most parts of Europe, I think that facilitated the assimilation of white ethnics in the post-war period, because the Italian guy didn't have to hold on to his language to communicate with a new guy off the boat. But that's not really happening with Hispanics, so.
So I was listening to your show with Walt Bismarck, and you had a debate about low versus high skilled immigration. So you were saying you consider like poor immigration from Latin America to be a bigger issue, but he had a sort of counterpoint where he saw illegal immigration as less of an issue. Like one point he said he was talking about like some middle class white guy who wants to be an entrepreneur. Like he would actually benefit somewhat, he would benefit from illegal immigration. So I guess the argument against high-skilled or merit-based immigration is that changing the composition of the elite or the managerial class is going to have a much bigger impact than changing the composition of the lower classes or working class.
I haven't really thought about it that way before Walt brought it up. And I'm not sure if I have a cogent response to that yet, but I would offer two observations. Number one, I think high-skilled immigration just benefits America more from an economic perspective, because you get high human capital. These people are more likely to form new tech companies, more likely to have positive knowledge spillover effects on the native born population, which enhances their productivity. Whereas low-skilled migration, we live in an era where low-skilled migration has never been under more pressure, either from automation or skill-based technological change. And I feel like adding more pressure to their wages is not such a good idea, especially if you read the literature with George Borjas, this Harvard Hispanic economist. So.
What are your thoughts on some of the cultural conformity in Chinese and East Asian culture? Do you think it's primarily the influence of Confucianism? Is there also a strong focus on focusing on, say, like practical career paths that are more economically lucrative? Is that a major focus in Asian culture as well?
Oh, it certainly is. So I recently saw some data that shows that if you look at American teenagers and you ask them what are their top career paths that they want to pursue, it's like the top five are like are like actress, professional basketball player, professional gamer, YouTuber, TikTok personality. made me fear for the future of this country. Everyone, all the Asians I grew up with were taught by their parents, including me, that, you got to be a doctor, engineer, lawyer, that those are the high status paths available to you and the ones that provide the most practical, financial considerations. I think the reason Asians think this way is mainly because many of them come from much poorer countries, and their parents grew up in bare subsistence. Like my mom grew up in 1960 China during the Great Leap Forward, where the whole family of four was given a ration of half a pound of meat per month for family of four. So these people lived in bare subsistence, and so it's things like individual personal actualization, being happy, pursuing your passion, these things they just roll their eyes at because I was barely surviving. So they're telling their child, what matters most is earning money, putting a roof over your head, feeding your family.
What are your thoughts on the current political situation in China, as well as the likelihood that China might invade Taiwan, which there's been a lot of hyperbole about?
I think the CCP's legitimate. So much of the CCP's legitimacy rests upon ending the so-called century of humiliation at the hands of Western powers, and to them, that means returning to imperial China's borders. Add to that since the end of communism, there's been an ideological vacuum in the CCP, and what's filled that ideological vacuum when communism left. What is pan-nationalism? So that's why I think those two things make it or why they're so obsessed with trying to reunify with Taiwan. That's why like Xi Jinping says things like blood is thicker than water when he talks about the inevitability of unification. I think that if they do attack, America is certainly going to intervene. Because if we don't, then we'll lose all credibility to our East Asian allies, and it'll be the end of any presence that we have in that region. But in the long run, if the balance of power continues to shift in China's favor, I don't know if we can defend them conventionally. And so we might have to. So I've advocated that we arm them with Trident-esque nuclear submarines that run around the island so that they can tell Beijing, if you attack us, the cost is going to be a nuke on Beijing and Shanghai. So, but I don't know.
We're at the end of the show. Before I wrap up, Flower Heart, do you want to plug your Substack?
Oh, so I write a Substack. It's called The Flower Heart. It's a Chinese expression for being a player. It's a joke among my friends. So I write about things like demographic changes, immigration policy, Chinese politics, just anything that comes to mind.
Thank you for tuning in. You can follow Robert Stark on his Substack at robertstark.substack or on his website at starktruthradio.com. See you next time.